I'll say good morning. Today's daf is Lamed Tes. We are picking up on Lamed Ches Amud Beis 38b. So remember, let's actually just begin. Amar Abaye. We read this yesterday, but let's just start from it again. It's 2, 4, 6 lines up from the bottom on Lamed Ches Amud Beis. So Amar Abaye. Abaye said, Ba Aleh Umesa Potter. If a man violates a woman, and then what happens? She dies prior to the collection of the knas. So remember again, before the father of the girl has the chance to go ahead and bring the violator to Beis Din, so she goes in and she dies. So what's the halacha? Potter. So Abaye says, the violator is potter from the knas. Shneimar, v'nason la'avia na'ara, v'lo la'avi mesa. Because the pasuk says that the violator shall give to the father of the girl and not to the father of the deceased. The idea of avia na'ara indicates that the na'ara must be alive at the time that the case comes before Beis Din. Fine. To which the Gemara says, Milsa d'pshita le'la Abaye, mi'boy le'lerava. Something that was very pasha to Abaye was really a kasha for Rava. The boy Rava, because Rava asked the following question: Yesh begar begar bekever or ain begar bekever? Supposed to say, now this sounds very strange. Is there maturation? Could a girl reach bagros in the grave or not? So what is the Gemara asking over here? Look at Rashi. Yesh begar bekever. Listen to this interesting kasha. So let's say a girl dies and she's a nara. Let's say a simple case: the man violates a girl, she's a nara, and then she dies. And by the time the case comes to court, she would have been a bogeris. Now, we'll discuss what the nafkamina is if she would have been a bogeris by the time the case was adjudicated. Meaning, remember, bogeris means a gidolo, a full adult. 12 years old, 12 and a half years old, 12 years old, 6 months and one day. That's a bogeris. So the shayla is, let's say by the time the case comes to court, she would have been a bogeris. But of course now, unfortunately, she's no longer living. So do we say yesh beger bekever? Do we go ahead and say that we look at her as a bogeres even in the grave or not? It's an interesting shaila. So the Gemara says, yesh beger bekever or meger bekever. Yesh, so we'll say, what's the nafkamina? Yesh beger bekever udibna havi. Oh, Dilma ain't beggar bekever udavi haver. Let's listen to this. So if you say yesh beggar bekever, if you say that there is bagros in the grave, that means that let's say they find the violator guilty and he has to pay the knas. Who would the knas go to? Let's say for argument's sake she had a child. Now we'll discuss exactly how all of this stuff unfolds. But let's say she had a child. So we'll say, so who would get the knas payment if she was a bogeres, if we consider a bogeres? Literally her child. Now we'll say, now what that means is, remember, if she is a bogeres, let's say in a regular case of where a girl is violated as a nara, and by the time that the adjudication of the case occurs, she is a bogeres. She is a bogeres, then lemaisa what? Lemaisa, she gets to keep the knas, because she is an adult woman. So the shailana over here is she's dead, so she can't get the knas, but let's say she had a child. See, if you hold yesh beger bekever, that there is maturation in the kever, not literally physiological, but again, halachic, then lemaisa, again, we would award the knas to her child, to her offspring who inherits her. On the other hand, if you hold in beggar bekever, no. Once she dies, the clock stops. Then by definition, she is eternally a nara. Then at the end of the day, it's the father who gets the knas. So the Gemara says, top of Lamates, umima abra. So the Gemara says, but 1 second. How would there ever be a case, Rav Osai, where a girl who was violated as a nara would have had a child and yet still died before she became a bogeres? So the Gemara says, after all, we learned this earlier. V'atani Rabbi b'kamid Rav Nachman, shalosh nashim misham shos b'moch. There are three different women who are permitted to use a moch. Remember again, a moch was a form of birth control where a woman would insert a cloth prior to bia in order to be able to absorb the zera and prevent pregnancy. So the Gemara says, under normal circumstances, usage of a moch would be aser, right? Would be aser. Why? Because of ashchasas zera, because of destruction of seed. Because since, again, the woman is actively preventing the zera from entering her body, from entering fully into her body. Therefore, that's called destruction of seed. You can't do it. These three women are permitted to do it, are permitted to use birth control. This one, birth control, because the mice, so again, there is some element of sakana. And these are the three women: Kitana, a minor, Meuberes, a woman who is pregnant, Umeinika, and the nursing woman. So what's the pshat? Kitana Shema Tisaber. So a girl who is a Kitana is permitted to go ahead and use the moch. Why? Lest she become pregnant, Vitamus, and she will die. Meaning a Kitana cannot sustain a pregnancy. She won't survive, the baby won't survive. Mu'uberes, a woman is pregnant, Shema Tase Ubra Sandal. Because we'll say, remember again that what happens to the moon? What are we concerned about? We're concerned that a pregnant woman will become pregnant again and go ahead and kill off the first baby. Now I'll tell you what, I'll say something interesting. So you remember when we first learned this, so Sayyid Haken's daughter is an OBGYN. So she actually, so I was speaking to her, she was actually at my house for lunch when this case came up, and I asked her, I said, is this possible? She said no. She said not possible. So she was at the Siyum, and she told her, I slowly said, I found out there is like some rare, I forgot, there's a name for it. Sorry, I'm not gonna know if you're familiar with this. Some rare case where a woman could conceive ultimately again while she's pregnant again. The pregnancy won't be a viable pregnancy, but it absolutely could negatively impact the first. I'll have to ask her again what it was called. So just interesting. Any event, so the Gemara says, next, Menika, a woman who's nursing, Shema Tigmo Esbina. Lest she go ahead and lose some of her milk supply, and as a result, again, negatively impact her daughter. The easy kitana. I'm about to say, let's go back. What's the case of the kitana? The easy kitana. So the Gemara says, mibas achat esrei shana v'yom echad. Ad shteim esrei shana v'yom echad. So Bosse, what's a katana? A katana is from 11 years old in one day to 12 years old in one day. Pachos mikan v'yaser alkein mishameshes kedarka v'oleches. But less than that, meaning less than 11 years old in one day, there's no possibility of pregnancy. And above 12 years old in one day, she could become pregnant and we're not concerned. Divrei Rabbi Meir, these are the words of Rabbi Meir. The chum say no, achazu v'achazu mishameshes kedarka. So Bosse, the chum have a very interesting position. They say none of these women are permitted to go ahead and use birth control. Why? And ultimately, again, Kadosh Baruch will have compassion on them. Mishum she'ne'emar shomer pesayim Hashem. Ultimately, Kadosh Baruch Hu watches over the simple ones. And I will say, now we're not going to get into this Shita of the Chachamim, because the Shita of Chachamim is quite intriguing. That the Chachamim seem to say, the Chachamim are not arguing that there's an element of sakana, but the Chachamim seem to say that when there is an element of sakana in what we call normative activity, for that we rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu to watch over us. So we'll say, because you know what's interesting, again, not our topic for now, but you know, in general, the halacha says one is not permitted to engage in dangerous activity. One of the permitting is that how you define dangerous is interesting. So the Pashas, let's say if you were to ask a Shaila, could I go skydiving? So just the Pashas, the answer to that would be no. Would be no. The truth is, some poskim would say you're not allowed to play tackle football. Some poskim would say you're not allowed to ski. Again, there are poskim who say these things because lamaisigan, these are all things that have incredible danger. And therefore, again, one is not permitted to go ahead. It's not the majority opinion. One is not permitted to do these things. But why don't you say not permitted to drive? Because every single time you drive, there's an element of sakana. Every single time you go out and you cross the street, there's an element of sakana. So what's the answer? The answer is because, obviously, when it comes to what we call activities of daily living, even when there is a sakana, because they have to be done, l'maisa, we assume that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us an element of shmir, an element of protection. So the Chachamim will say that in these cases, look, true, there's a danger, but because they're normal parts of life, therefore, again, Shomer Pesayim Hashem. So I will say, the reason why the Gemara quotes this whole thing is why? Because Lamaisa, again, what we're saying is that a girl prior to the age of 12, at least according to Rabbi Meir, would be Mishameshes Bemoch, ultimately again, would be using this form of birth control. But the point over here that we see is that Lamaisa, the girl is not becoming pregnant at most until the age of 12. So if she's not becoming pregnant until the age of 12, how exactly are you going to have this case where what? Where the girl was violated and had a child and yet died before Bagrus. Because they're both saying, remember, if a girl becomes pregnant between the ages of 11 and 12, what does the Gemara say? That she's going to die and the baby's going to die. It's not going to be a viable pregnancy. So how are you having a case where a girl became pregnant and gave birth and died all before Bagrus? To which the Gemara says, "V'chite imadi abra kishinara v'olidi kishinara." Well, maybe she became pregnant while she was, maybe she was violated right when she became a nara, 12 years old, and she gave birth while still a nara as well. But what's the problem? Could a woman give birth within 6 months? Meaning, Amar said there's only a 6 month window of Narus. V'hamar Shmuel, b'yet Shmuel said, Ein bein Narus lebagrus ela shisha chadashim. B'yet Shmuel said, there's only 6 months in between Narus and Bagrus. V'chitema b'tzirhu deleka hatfeika. Maybe Shmuel means that there is at least 6 months between Narus and Bagrus, but what? Maybe a girl could be a bogeris even for longer than 6 months. You can't say that. Why? The Gemara says, Ela Kamar. Ha Ela Kamar. Shmuel says, only Ela. Ela means there are only 6 months between Na'aros and Bagrus, which indicates to us what? That the entire period of Na'aros only lasts 6 months. Ela Hachi Kami Baile. Rather, again, this is ultimately, again, what he's asking. This is what the question is. Yesh beger bekever upaka av. Oh, Dilma ain't beggar bekerav ala paka. I will say you're right. The Gemara is not asking about offspring. There is no offspring in this case. The Gemara is asking a much simpler question. Does the clock stop once the girl dies or not? That's the question of yesh beggar bekever. Do we view kind of time as continuing forward, or I should say, her life continuing forward until the case is adjudicated? Is there bagrus? Can she become a bulgaris in the grave? That will say. So the nafkamina simply is, if let's say she's violated as a nara, then dies, but the case is not brought to court for another 3 months. So had she been alive, she would have been a bulgaris. So do we look at her status now as a bulgaris even in the grave? In which case, what, Rabosai? The father would have no rights in the penalty payment because she's a bulgaris. Or do we say, no, once she dies, the clock stops, and there is no bagrus in the grave, and therefore it's if she's still a nara, and therefore the father is entitled to the knas. I'm sorry? In that case, it probably would be to no one. Because, again, the only person who would inherit her would be your father. Mar Baravashi boilehachi. So Mar Baravashi asked the same question. If you look at Rashi, so Rashi says over here, Paka'av. Rashi says, Paka Tvias Av, Vizaka Halab Mashem Biyado, Shein Baldino Kayim. So we'll say, so again, so therefore, if you say Yesh Beger Bekever, if you say she matures and she's a Bogeres, then ultimately what it really means is the violator gets off the hook. He keeps the money. So Mar Baravashi phrased it a little bit differently. Misa Osa Bagrus. So we'll say he phrased it a little bit differently. What he said is, does Nisa create automatic bagrus or not? Look at Rashi. Mar Baravashi, lo boi la baya dereva, mishum beger mekever, ela imesa benarusa mipaka ki bagrus de mechayim o lo. So we'll say what's interesting over here is that Lameisa, what he's, Mar Baravashi is asking a little bit differently. Does Misa essentially create a state of bagrus? And if Misa creates a state of bagrus, then what, Rabosai? Then what? Then the father has no rights to the penalty payment, but Lameisa, the violator, gets to keep his money, or not? Which, Rabosai, is essentially the question that we started with before, which was Abaye's case of where the man violated the girl and then she died. So according to Abaye, it's a davar pashit that if the man violates the girl and then she dies, that the father has no rights in the money. Abaye darshin avia na'ara. It's only avia na'ara and not avia mesa. But apparently not everybody thought this is as clear cut as Abaye. And therefore again, Mar Baravashi asked the kasha, to which the Gemara says, Teku, to which the Gemara says, ultimately, again, this kasha needs to stand. And I will say, now you should know, halacha lemaisa, we paskin like Abaye, in that if a man violates a girl, and then ultimately, again, she dies before there's an opportunity to bring the case to Beis Din, that lemaisa, the violator, is exempt from the payment, because once the father is no longer called Avia Na'ara, he's no longer called the father of the girl, rather he's called Avia Mesa, ultimately there is no obligation to pay. That is how we paskin halacha lemaisa.
But he's putter from payment, putter from everything, there's no punishment.
Look, he raped a woman. So first of all, in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch, whatever's going to happen. Now, remember, I want to point something out, because let's bring up a very important point. Beis Din always has the ability to punish however they want. However they want. So they could flog him if they want. Now remember, Beis Din could also impose a financial penalty on him should they choose. So they could say, remember, Beis Din would have the right to say, you're right, you are exempt from the technical biblical penalty, but we are still assessing you a fine that you must pay to the family. They could do that. They could do that. I don't know historically what was done. So technically, again, he is exempt from the biblical punishment, but Beis Din reserves the right to always punish. So the Gemara goes weiter. It's another interesting case. So Rav asked to find Kashma Abaye. Ba'aleha. I'm sorry, I just lost the place. Ba'aleha v'nis arsa mahu. So the interesting case. What happens if Lamaisa, let's analyze this case. Man violates a woman, and then after he violated her, before there's an opportunity to go to Beis Din, she becomes betrothed to another man. Vinisar, so she becomes betrothed. So what's the halacha? So Rashi says, Ba'aleha kishihi na'aro bagra. So I'm sorry, actually that's wrong, Rashi. So Ba'aleha is ma'o. Amarle miksiv v'nasan la'aviha na'ara asher lo arusa. So we'll say, so the shaila is now, does he still have an obligation to go out and pay the fine? So now remember, Abaye says, Abaye says, of course, does the pasuk say that the violator has to pay to the father of the girl who is not betrothed? And we'll say, meaning, who cares if she's betrothed or she's not betrothed? At the end of the day, he violated her. He has to pay her. Ula ta'amech, but using that logic, ha desanya, that's which we learned. Ba'aleha v'niseis. Now we'll say, the shaila now is really not as much do you have to pay the fine. You know, we have to pay the fine. The shaila is, who do you have to pay the fine to? Do you have to pay the fine to the father, or do we pay the fine ultimately to the girl herself? So the Gemara says, of course, you're going to pay the fine to the father. Does the pasuk say that you have to give to the father of the girl who's not betrothed? No, it says you give to the father of the girl. And using this logic, that's which we learned. Ha'ba'aleha v'niseis. If, let's say, a man violated a woman, and then before the fine was paid, she actually had nisuin, she married another man. What's the halacha? Latzma, she gets to keep the fine herself. Miksiv nasan la'aviha na'ara asher lo nesua. But one second, why would that be? Why wouldn't we give the fine to the father? After all, does the pasuk say that you should give to the father of the girl who was not married? No, it just says you give to the father of the girl, which sounds like what Rabbi was saying. Under all circumstances, no matter what her status is now, meaning no matter if she's in a sewer, she's in arusa, lemaisa, you should still have to give it to the father. So hachi hashta hasam hoilu bagros motzim mirshu sa'av v'nisuin motzim mirshu sa'av. So now the Gemara says, no, when she gets married, when there's nisuin, it's fundamentally different. Why, Rabbi Osai? Just like when she becomes a bogeres, she leaves the rishus of the father. And just like if she's a bogeres, she gets to keep the fine. So too, again, when she undergoes nisuin, she also leaves the rishus of her father and she gets to keep the fine. However, ma bagrus ba'aleha u'bagra li'atzma. Just like in Bagrus, if he violated her when she was an Ara, and then she became a Bogera, she gets to keep the fine. Af nisuin ba'aleha v'niseis la'atzma. So too by nisuin, if he violated her while she was an Ara, and then she had nisuin, she gets to keep it. She gets to keep the money. Ela erisin mi kamafki mershu se da'av. But Rabbi said the fundamental shayla is, what about erisin? Does erisin take her out of the rishus atar? Now, obviously, this would be talking about a case where she did erisin when? While she was still a nara. Because obviously, if she did erisin as a bogeres, then of course the kenas is hers. She did erisin as a nara. What's that locha? Mikamafki mirshu sada avlegamre. So the Gemara says, Mikamafki mirshu sada avlegamre. Does erisin take her out of the rishus of the father altogether? Hotnan, we learned. Nara hameurasa. If you have a girl who is betrothed, Avia ubayla mefirin lo nadareha. We'll say, what's the halacha? Both her father and her husband must go ahead and annul her nadarim. And in fact, her nadarim are not annulled until what? Until both of them participate in the annulment process, which tells you what? That she is still in the rishus of her father. So we'll say, what comes out from this entire sugya is the following. What comes out from this sugya is, again, if a girl is violated as an ara, obviously, and then becomes a bogeres, she gets to keep the knas herself. If she's violated as an ara, and it comes to, actually, I should start with the basic case. She's violated as an ara, comes to court as an ara, who gets the knas, who gets the penalty? Her father. However, again, if she's violated as an ara, but ultimately, again, But ultimately, again, the case doesn't come to court until she's a bogeres. Then halacha lemaisa, she gets to keep the money herself. If she was violated as a nara, but ultimately had erusin as a nara, the halacha over there is what? Then halacha lemaisa, again, if she's violated as a nara, has erusin as a nara, she's still in the rishus of her father. Her father gets the money. However, if she is violated as a nara and has nisuin as a nara, then the money belongs to her. Because just like Bagros takes her out of the rishus of her father, so too Nisuin takes her out of the rishus of the father. Fine. Says the Mishnah, HaMefate nosein shlosha dvarim. It will say, if a man seduces a woman, he has to pay her three different payments. Va'ones arba. But if a man violates a woman, he has to pay her four different payments. So it will say, so what are these payments? So the Mishnah says, nosein, this is for the Mefate, nosein boshas, upigam, ukinas. So you have to pay boshas. So boshas is, remember, humiliation. Pigam rabosa is depreciation. Every person ultimately, again, has a value. We'll discuss exactly how that value is decided. But a person has a value. And obviously, as a result of this event, her value will be diminished. And knas. Knas is the penalty payment. So that's what you have to pay for the mefata. That's what you have to pay for the man who seduces the woman. Mosif alav onis. But again, if a man violates a woman, there's a fourth payment. Then what's the fourth payment? Shinosein esatsar. You have to pay pain and suffering. Pain and suffering. Ma bein onis lemefata. What's the difference between a man who violates and seduces a woman? Ha onis nosein esatsar. Mefata ein nosein esatsar. Number one, an onis has to pay for pain and suffering, right, tsar? And the mefata, the seducer, does not, which also makes sense, of course, because if a man seduced a woman, that means at the end of the day it was consensual. So therefore there's no tsar. Therefore there's no pain associated with it, as opposed to the fact if the man goes ahead and violates the woman. Furthermore, v'amefata eino nosin esatsar, the one who seduces does not have to pay tsar. Ha'ones nosin yad. But here's something else that's interesting. The ones has to pay immediately. Has to pay immediately. Rashi says, ha'ones nosin miyad, la'avia afapi shekonsa. Remember the halacha, if a man violates a woman, he must marry her, assuming that she wants it and her father wants it. He must marry her. Even though he must marry her, he has to pay her the fine immediately. Immediately. Okay, I should say pay her father the fine immediately. Va'mefata l'chishiyotzi. But interestingly enough, the mefata, you only have to pay her the money when? Literally with l'chishiyotzi. Now l'chishiyotzi sounds to me, Rabosei, when you divorce her. Now, Rashi points out over here that's not what it means. We'll see it in the Gemara later on. We'll see later on in the Gemara, because by the mefata, actually, if you marry her, there is no penalty payment at all. Rather, l'chishiyotzi means if you go ahead and you decide not to marry her, we're going to see in the Gemara, then you have to pay her the fine at that point in time. Ha'onis shosabatzito. Rabosei, if a man violates a woman, literally he must drink of the same bowl. What that means is, if you violate her, you marry her. If you violate her, that is the woman ultimately, again, that you have to marry. Va'mefate imratza lahotzi motzi. But you will say, if the man seduces a woman, he is not obligated to marry her. He's not obligated to marry her. If he doesn't want to marry her, we'll see, she doesn't have to marry. If she doesn't want to marry, fathers, if any one of the parties involved doesn't want the marriage to occur, the marriage need not occur. So the Gemara says, Ketzad shosa batzi. So what does that mean? That the violator has to drink from his bowl, right? That literally, again, he has to marry her. What that means is, afilu hi chigeres, afilu hi suma, v'afilu mikashkin. Even if she's crippled, even if she's blind, even if she's covered in boils, right? Ultimately, again, no matter how compromised this situation may be, he's obligated to marry her. However, nimtza ba davar erva, but Rabosei lemaisa, again, let's say if after being married, there is some element of immorality that she engages in adultery or some act of immorality, or she's a mamzeris, let's say. So he's not permitted to marry her. In that situation, then of course, again, he's not permitted to remain married to her. Shene emar, velo sieli isha, she shall be to him a wife. Isha ruila. So what the Gemara is saying over here is that as much as there is an obligation and an obligation to go ahead and marry this woman that he violated, that is only true if what? If it's a legal marriage. If it's not a legal marriage, then inachinami is obligation, the obligation of a man to violate the woman he violated, the obligation of a man to marry the woman he violated does not trump any other prohibitions that concern or that govern the laws of marriage. Because the pasuk says, for lo siyali isha, she shall be to my wife, isha rila, she has to be a wife that is fit halachically for him. Says the Gemara, tsara demai, and I will say, so remember again, The Gemara said that there are four different types of payments that one pays when going ahead and violating a woman. The first three are the same by both Ones and Mefata. So remember, Boshes, Pigam, and Knas. By both of them you have to pay. So humiliation, depreciation, and penalty. But when a man violates him by the Ma'anes, by Ones, you also have to pay Tsar. So the Gemara says, Tsar Demai, what's the Tsar? What's the tsar? Amar avod dishmol tsar shechavta al gabi karko. The tsar is that the violator presumably threw the woman down on the ground. So because he threw her down on the ground, that act of being thrown to the ground, that's her tsar. Maskef la Rabbi Zira, elmi ato chavta al gabi shira and hachen abi depater. So you're telling me then that let's say he pushed her down, not on the ground, but he pushed her down on silk, right? He pushed, meaning he pushed her down. It was soft, so it didn't hurt. That there's no tsar in that case. V'chitei machinami, maybe you'll say, yes, that indeed is the case. Vatai, but we learned. Rabbi Shimon, Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Ones, Eino Meshalim, Esat Tsar. I suppose it's an interesting shita. Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda says, name Rabbi Shimon, that a man who violates a woman does not have to pay tsar. Why? Mipnei shesofa lehitsta'er tachas baila. Because Rabbi says she's going to have that tsar of Bia Rishona at some point in time anyway. Since she's going to have that tsar of Bia Rishona, right, under her husband, therefore the Maisa again, there's no tsar. So the Gemara says, Amrullo, what are you talking about? Eino dome niveles ba'ones liniveles beratzon. How can you compare those two things? It's true that she's going to have some tsar from the Bia Rishona with her husband, but that she's compliant, right? That she desires. How can you compare that tsar that she has with a man who she wants to be with versus a man who she's violated by? Rather, again, the tsar that we're speaking about over here literally is the tsar of spreading her legs. That since ultimately, again, the violator spreads her legs forcibly, so that ultimately, again, is the tsar that we're referring to. V'cheinu Omer, and similarly, again, he quotes the pasuk, is from Yecheskel, v'tefaski es raglayech l'chol over. So the Navi, when going ahead and really giving incredible musr to Klal Yisrael, says that Klal Yisrael is so ridiculously immoral, like a woman who opens her legs to anyone who passes. Ihachi mefuta nami. If that's the case again, that even when a woman is seduced, there should be that tsar. Amrav Nachman, Amrav Baravua, Mashal de mefuta lema davardome. To what can the mafuta be compared to? Give a mashal. La adam sh'amar lechavero kara shira in sheli v'hi pater. Literally tear my silk and I let you be pater. On the other side, that what the Gemara is making the assumption over here is that there's some inherent discomfort that a woman experiences during bia, what we'll call just simple, like, for lack of a better term, like positional discomfort. So the Gemara says, well, if there's positional discomfort, so why wouldn't that apply also in the case of mefata? To which the Gemara says, because if a woman is a willing participant in the act of bia, she forgives, meaning that obviously she has pleasure from the act, so any pleasure that she has from the act eclipses any other discomfort that she may have. So it's like someone who says, you know, I'm giving you permission to tear my silk. So here, you're damaging on one hand, but because the person is inviting you and because the person is allowing you to do it, let me see your putter. So the Gemara says, one second, Shali, Davon inhu. But one second, this is not ultimately, again, hers to forgive. Does this penalty not belong to her father? Ela Amar Rav Nachman Bar Avuha, excuse me, Ela Amar Rav Nachman Amar Rav Bar Avuha, Pikchos Shebahen Omros. So the wise women among them say, meaning Rabbi say Pikchos, refer to, you know, Chazal, when they had these questions about things, you know, there's only so much a man is going to be able to answer about these situations. You actually have to ask a woman what the dynamic is. So the Pikchos, the wise women would say, Mufuta ein latzar. They would say, no, the truth is, if a woman is willing and a woman is desirous of the act, ultimately there's no tsar for the pisuk raglayim. Vaha kach azinan de islay. But one second, other women say that there is some discomfort. Abaye says, it's actually interesting. Amrili aim, my mother told me. Must have been an awkward conversation, but in any event, right? My mother told me. So the Gemara says, Kimaya Chamimi al Reshei Dekarcha, that ultimately, again, there's some level of discomfort when there's Pisuk Raglayim, but it's like hot water on the head of a bald person. So they say, what does that mean? So like there's some level of, meaning it's referring to a very minor level of discomfort, a negligible amount of discomfort. Rava Amar Rava said, Amrili Bas Rav Chista, the daughter of Rav Chista. And Abba said, the daughter of Rav Chista was Rava's wife. She said that the discomfort of Pisa Graglaim is like Kirivda Dikusilta, is like the little bit of like the prick of a blood letters needle. So the idea that you're all describing is generally very minimal discomfort. Rav Papa said, Amrili Bas Abba, the daughter of Abba, which was his wife, Bas Abba Sura said to me, Kinamo akusha b'chinchi. It's like when you're eating tough bread and the tough bread rubs against the palate. So it was like they're all just describing the same dynamic, which is a minimal amount of discomfort, that is negligible, especially again when eclipsed by greater pleasure from the act. So the idea that the Gemara is saying over here is that Lamaisa, the tsar that is associated with onus, with the man who violates the woman, is the tsar of pisuk raglaim, the tsar of forcibly, you know, opening her legs. That's the tsar. And even though, again, there's some level of that tsar that exists by the mefata, by the case of a man who seduces a woman because she is compliant in that act, so that tsar is considered to be negligible in the face of the greater pleasure from the act. Ha'ones nosin miyad, ha'ones. No sin miyad, v'amefat l'chashiyotze. So remember again, the other distinction the Mishnah said is that the ones has to pay the penalty payment immediately, but the mefata only pays it when what? L'chashiyotze. Now, both of the l'chashiyotze sounds like when he divorces her. So says the Gemara, l'chashiyotze ishtohi. When you say that he pays her when he divorces her, you make it sound like the man has already married the mefata. But again, as we know, the mefata, in the case of a man who seduces a woman, there is not an obligation for him to marry her. Amar Abaye Ema L'chishalo Yichnos. No, what it means is Abaye says that once he makes the decision not to marry her, he must immediately then pay her the penalty payment. Tayin Amyachir Baisa that supports this. Afapish Amram Mefata Nosen L'chishalo Yichnos. Even though we said that the Mefata has to pay the penalty payment when he decides that he's not marrying this woman. However, Boshes Upegam Nosin Miyad. But her humiliation and depreciation, he must pay immediately. And I'm both saying this is a very important distinction. Remember, what's the distinction between the penalty payment and boshes and pegam? Boshes and pegam is what we call mamon. That's financial compensation for damages. Financial compensation for damages is payable immediately. Penalty payment, it depends. If he's going to marry her, this is by the case of the man who seduces woman, the mefata. So penalty payment, if he marries her, there actually is no penalty payment. It actually gets rolled into like a ksuva. But ultimately, again, if he doesn't, once he decides that he's not marrying her, that's when he has to pay the penalty payment immediately. Ve'echat ha'onis ve'echat ha'mefata. And whether a man violates woman or seduces a woman, bein hi o bein aviha, yecholin la'akev. Either she or her father, Ben Hiyo Ben Aviyah, Yechol Nakev, have the ability to say they don't want the marriage. So we'll say in the case of the Mefata, actually this is in both cases, excuse me, Ones and Mefata, both the man who seduces a woman and violates a woman, the girl or her father have the ability to go ahead and say we don't want the marriage. Now remember again, I'll both say one distinction. In the case of Ones, he, the violator, has absolutely no say. He has to marry her. The only one who could prevent marriage from occurring is the girl and her father. In the case of Mefata, the man who seduces the woman, he has a greater say, and he can actually go ahead and say, I'm not interested. So the Gemara says, Bishlam Mefuta Ksiv Ima Inyama Ein Aviha. So I understand the case of where the man seduces the woman. The Pasuk says, if her father refuses to give her to marriage to this man, we see the father has the right to refuse the marriage. Eimi El Aviha. I only know that her father has the right to refuse the marriage. He atzma minayin. How do we know that she, the girl herself, has the ability to refuse the marriage? Talmud lomar, yima ein mikol makom. Therefore, the pasuk says, yima ein, that's an additional word, and that means, again, that comes to include her as well. Ela onis, what about the case of where a man violates a woman? Bishlama ihi ksiv velo sihia midaita. So I understand why she has the right to refuse, because it says that she will be to him as a wife. So we see from here it has to be with her consent. If she doesn't want to marry the man who violated her, she has no obligation to do so. But where do we know that her father has the ability to go ahead and prevent the marriage from occurring? Amr Abaye, shelo yehechote niskar. Abaye says, well, we don't want the sinner to benefit. And I will say, now, how would the sinner benefit? This is actually very interesting. So Rashi points out over here, because before the man violated this woman as a nara, her father had the right to go ahead and choose to marry her off or not. just because this man violated this girl does not mean that he should compromise the father's rights. Therefore, just like the father had rights in his Nara daughter prior to her violation, he retains rights in those Nara daughter after violation as well. Rava Amar, Rava said, Kav Chomer. It's Kav Chomer. Uma mefatesh lo avar ela al dasa viha bilvad. When it comes to the mefatesh, the man who seduces the woman. Now, who's been harmed when the man seduces the woman? The truth is, it was with her consent at the end of the day. The only person who he really harmed was the father. And yet what? Both she and her father have the ability to prevent the marriage from occurring. Onis, in a case of onis where a man violated a woman, where not only did he violate the girl and go against her will, but he also went against the will of the father. Then of course what? Kol shekein. All the more so, the father should also have the right to go at me. So I'll say, in a case of where only the will of the father was violated, in the case of the seduction, the father has the right to prevent the marriage from occurring. So certainly in a case where both the rights of the father and the daughter were violated, that lamaisa, the father has a right to go ahead and prevent the marriage from occurring. Rava lo amar kabaye. So I'll say, so now remember, Rava and Abaye are both agreeing in principle, right? That's what? That in both the cases of onis and mefate, father and daughter have the right to prevent the marriage from occurring. The difference is, Rabbi, in the case of mefate, it's obvious. In the case of ones, it has to be learned out. So Abai says, in ones, we learn an ouch lo ye chote niskar, right? That again, that the chote, the violator, should not have the right to deprive the father of his rights of marrying off or not marrying off his daughter. And Rava says it's a kavachomer. So Rava lo omar kabai, Rava said the kavachomer did not subscribe to Abai's idea of shalay chote niskar. Why? Kevan de kamashalim knas, lav chote niskar. Because Rava will say, I don't understand. The truth is, the violator is not benefiting in any way. Why? Because the maisi still has to pay the penalty payment. So there's no schar, he still has to pay the penalty payment. Abai lo over kamara Rava, and Abai doesn't say like Rava, why? Mefate, because remember, Abaye doesn't hold like Rava, like doesn't hold like the Kavachomer, because Mefate deihu matzi ma'akev, avia nami matzi ma'akev. See, no, because Mefate is different. Because what's in the case of Mefate, who else can say he doesn't want the marriage? The Mefate himself, the seducer, the man, can also say he doesn't want the marriage. So if the man can say he doesn't want the marriage, then what? Then, of course, the father also has the rights to say he doesn't want the marriage. However, onis, in a case of onis, the ihu lo matzi ma'akev, where the violator doesn't have the right to say I don't want the marriage, aviha nami lo matzi ma'akev. So I could say that the father also doesn't have the right to go ahead and prevent the marriage. Therefore, I will say. Therefore, again, Abaye says that's why Abaye chooses to go ahead and say shlo yechote niskar. Tanya, iduach of another brisa that supports this. Afa pi sha'amru ones nosin miad kishiyotzehu. Right. So we'll say even though we said that an ones has to go ahead and pay her immediately. Pay her the knas. When a man violates a woman, you have to go ahead. So we'll say actually before we do that, let's stop here for just a moment by this Tanya Idach. So what comes out from this sugya is the following, that Lamaisa, everyone agrees in the principles. And the principles are that when it comes to the ones, the girl and the father have the right to prevent the marriage from occurring. The ma'anis, the violator, does not. When it comes to the case of the mefata, any of the three parties, which means the seducer, the girl, or the father, all have the right to say they don't want the marriage. Even Abaye and Rava don't disagree in principle as to the bottom line. They both agree in the case of ones, in the case of where the girl is violated, that the girl and the father have the right to prevent the marriage from occurring. They just argue as to how we learn it out. So let's just go a little bit weiter. Tanya Ida, we have a brisa that supports this. Afa pisha amru ones no simiad kishiyotzehu. Even though we said that if a man violates someone, he has to pay the knas immediately. Kishiyotzihu, when he goes out and divorces her, ein la alav klum. She has no financial claim against him. Okay, so the Gemara says, what does that mean? What that sounds like is that lamaisa, she doesn't have a ksuva. She has no claim of a ksuva against him. So the Gemara says, kishayotze, when he divorces her, mi matzik mafikla, Does he have the right to divorce her? So remember, the halach is that if a man violates a woman, he has to marry her, and he cannot divorce her. Ema kisha teitze he ein la alav klum. No, no, rather read it differently. That's what? That lamaisa, if she decides to leave him, if she decides to divorce him, then lamaisa, again, she has no claim of a ksuva against him. Mace, if he predeceases her, yotza kesef knasa b'ksuvasa. Lamaisa, again, the knas payment that he made, that really represents her ksuva. Rabbi Yossi Yehuda says, yesh la ksuva mana. Rabbi Yossi Yehuda says, no, she has a ksuva of 100 silver pieces, a mana. So the Rabbi says, it's a fundamental machlokis as to whether or not when a man violates a woman, so, and let's say predeceases her, does she have a ksuva or not? So first opinion says no. First opinion says that the money, the knas money that she got, that's her ksuva. Second opinion, Rabbi Yehuda says no, she has a mana of 100 zuz. But my kamiflagi, what are they arguing about? Rabbanan savri taima maita kin rabbanan ksuva kadei shalote kala be'inav lo tziya v'hala matzim afikla. So we'll say the Rabbanan who say that she doesn't have a ksuva, they say there's a logical reason why. What's the point of ksuva, Rabbosai? One of the reasons for ksuva was that a man should think twice before divorcing his wife. What's going to happen? He doesn't like dinner, or he doesn't like something else, whatever it is. Sometimes men could fly off the handle. So I don't want this marriage anymore. So what happens? If there is no financial penalty, it's nothing that hits him in the wallet, he may make a rash decision. But if decision hits him in the wallet, suddenly he takes a little bit more time to be contemplative. So though part of the reason for ksuva was that a man should think twice before going ahead and divorcing his wife, but that doesn't apply in this case. Why? Because it will say in this case, no matter how angry he gets, he can't divorce her. So if he can't divorce her again, therefore there's no need to give her a ksuva, and the penalty amount that she has, that's her ksuva. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Huda says, on the other hand says, Savar hanami mitzar la ad amrihi loba inalach. On the other hand, what he could do is the husband can make his wife's life so miserable that she says, I want out. In which case, again, he could still manipulate the system. Therefore, in order to prevent him from doing that, Rabbi Yossi says that she does get a ksuva of 100 zuz. Rabbi says, so how do we paskin halacha l'maisa? So we paskin in a case of where remember, there's no real case of divorce over here because he can't divorce her, but l'maisa in a case of where he predeceases him, so we paskin that l'maisa, again, there is no additional ksuva, but rather, again, her knas money essentially counts as her ksuva. All right, Rabbi says, we'll stop over here. Shukriya.